Okay, be honest with me. How many of you are still trying to recover from Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, whatever time you went to bed? Wow. I think I was there when they called Pennsylvania. I think it was 2:41 a.m. Stayed up to hear a little bit of the talk. And then, you know, there were some deer in the yard. So I had to get up and, you know, go to the window and watch the deer play around for a few minutes. I was after 4 o'clock when I got to bed and I started thinking, what are you thinking about? You got to work the rest of the week. So if you're still struggling because of Tuesday and Wednesday, then we're in the same boat. But welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz. We'll be here for the next hour on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer, here in Greenville, South Carolina. And it's beautiful out there. We got up this morning. Daughter brought her roommate home from school. We decided they wanted to go to the mountain and see some waterfalls. So we took off and rode up through North Carolina. And, yeah, early on it was real smoky. I think you had a little bit of a southwest wind going. And but then we turned across and went over to DuPont State Forest. It was, I think it was fine there. I didn't really smell anything. There was tons of people. It was great. I was riding down there. All the parking lots were full. People, kids, dogs, adults, couples. You know, it was great. We ate lunch. Went back to the car. And from that point on, there was only one guy on the entire property at DuPont that was in a bad mood. And that was me. The deal was I was going to take them to the mountains, get them lunch, and while they hiked up to the falls and all, I was going to trout fish. So we finished eating and went back to the car to pack everything away, and I pulled out my fly rod and tried to join two sections together, and I'm like, what in the world? Well, instead of being prepared and getting the stuff together last night, I did it in a hurry this morning, and I had two fly rods, a 4-weight and a 6-weight in the same tube. And so I pulled out. If you're not familiar with fly fishing, my rods are all three-piece rods. I don't like fours, and I really don't like twos, and certainly don't like ones. But all mine are 9-foot, three pieces. And in the tube was a 4 and a 6-weight. Normally, I would match up serial numbers or put it together right there. I just grabbed, you know, I made sure I had, of course, the handle part was easy to pick out. And I knew the tip, so I picked out those two parts. And I, you know, the other four pieces left, I said, well, there's the middle part, and just grabbed it. So when I went to assemble my fly rod, I had a 4-weight handle, a 4-weight tip, and a 6-weight tip. It's hard to fish that way. So ended up, me and my wife, we went and sat on a rock. And when, you know, when we sat down on the rock, there was a guy fishing in the pool above us. And then another couple of guys came walking in and started fishing the pool. And I'm just like, oh, can it get any worse? And then the guy above me caught a nice fish. And I'm like, okay, that's it. You know, so like I said, there was only one person in a bad mood of the whole place, and it was me. But came back down, not much color, north of Caesar's Head on the upper, the west, northwestern side of the mountains. But boy, I tell you, once you came across down Caesar's Head and coming down, it was beautiful. Little reds and yellows and oranges. They wanted to stop. We stopped off of Ball Rock, always a place you got to stop when you're up in the mountains. And I wasn't expecting it. I mean, I know there are a lot of forest fires out there, but we were walked down the front of Bald Rock looking out, and you see Greenville and Paris Mountain, and you fade around, and then boom, there's Table Rock. And I mean, it's really bizarre to see a mountain wildfire in South Carolina like that. You know, I've seen a bunch of control burns and seen some others, but to see a mountain, you know, just billowing white smoke above it, and then you got the little helicopter that's going down. I think they're filling up in the lake right across Highway 11 from Table Rock. And you can see it fly up, and it had a little bucket, and it'd dump its water and go back down. Holy smoke. But I think that fire has gone from about 50 acres to over 250 acres now. And I mean, the wind was blowing pretty good up there. It's dry. There's no rain in the next 10 days or so. Maybe a few showers tomorrow, but unreal. So, but yeah, if you want to get out, it's beautiful out there. And it is a little hazy, smoky when you're in certain places. But the leaves are great. The temperatures are just right. So, you know, kind of when you see all those people, you're like, wow, you know, not going to have it to ourselves. But it was great seeing everybody out there. And that's, like I said, everybody was smiling except for me. Now, I had a good time. My wife and I sat and talked for a little bit. I tried to teach her how to fly fish without a fly rod, but kind of tough to do. But, good times and do try to get out there. Well, we're one day away, one day past Veterans Day. I want to say happy Veterans Day to everyone who has served, who is serving and who will serve. We appreciate you. You know, there's about 2.2 million. There's fiscal year 2017. I think there's supposed to be about 1.4 million active duty, about 800,000 in the reserves. And I started thinking, I always like to bring this up. And, you know, last week, before the election, I said, you know, this boils down to one issue for me at the heart of it. I mean, there's a lot of issues, but the heart of it was the Second Amendment. And I, in connection with Veterans Day, and I like to bring this up, and this is something that if you haven't heard it before, it's interesting. If you have heard it, bear with me. And I think this is from like 2010 or 11. It's a few years old, but it's a great, great little slant on American hunters. And to all you veterans out there, current, past, whatever, this is who you have backing you up. Interesting slant on American hunters. A blogger added up the deer license sales in just a handful of states and arrived at a striking conclusion. There were over 600,000 hunters this season in the state of Wisconsin. Allow me to restate that, 600,000. Over the last several months, Wisconsin's hunters became the eighth largest army in the world. That's more men under arms than in Iran, more than France and Germany combined. These men deployed to the woods of a single American state, Wisconsin, to hunt with firearms, and no one was killed. That number pales in comparison to the 750,000 who hunted the woods of Pennsylvania and Michigan's 700,000 hunters, all of whom have returned home safely. Toss in a 250,000 hunters in West Virginia, and it literally establishes the fact that hunters of those four states alone would comprise the largest army in the world. Add in the total number of hunters in the other 46 states, it's millions more. And the point of all this, America will forever be safe from foreign invasion with that kind of homegrown firepower. Hunting, it's not just a way to fill the freezer. It's a matter of national security. That's why all enemies, foreign and domestic, want to see us disarmed. Overall, it's true, you know, maybe that, so if we disregard some assumptions that hunters don't possess the same skills as soldiers, which I would say would just be, you know, marching. I think hunters are, as a whole, are great woodsmen. They're marksmen to a T. But the question still remains, what army of 2 million, some other standing army, would want to face 30, 40, 50 million armed citizens? For the sake of our freedom, don't ever allow gun control or confiscation of guns. So I always like to bring that up every once in a while just to kind of put a face to it, so to speak. But happy veteran, we appreciate the veterans every day of the year, not just on Veterans Day, but those are the kind of people you got backing you up here at home. We are, we've mentioned several times the Southampton High School bass class. This is the last time I'll officially talk about it here. I may have some of the pros come on and talk about what they've done in the offseason, what they're going to talk about. But anyway, registration is open. It's going to happen Saturday, January 13th and 14th at the Anderson Civic Center. Right now, we have Gerald Swindle, Ott Defoe, Brian Latimer, Brandon Cobb, Paul Geddes is going to be there during a lower ranks class. We've got a panel of college guys, and we're working on a few more. I reached out to Matt Airy and Brian Thrift the other day. I think I'm going to get a hold of Brad Knight, see if he'll come down. He's been up in Canada deer hunting. So it's going to be good. If you want to register, if you're a high school angler, your coach hasn't heard about this yet, tell them about it. You can find all the information you need either on the Woods and Water South Carolina web, Facebook page, or contact Marty Walker at Palmetto Boat Center. He's got it all going in next. So we're going to funnel everything through him as far as registration. If you're an angler in a high school team, everybody will fill out individual sheets. Marty's got a template to consolidate them all to one master list. That's what you'll send in. And now we've just got to work on getting some goodies for you guys because it's going to be a fun time. And hopefully we're going to send everybody home with some stuff, which everybody likes, free tackle. Anyway, hang on through the break. We'll be back. We've got a lot of stuff to cover, but it's just me. So we'll see you on the other side. Yeah, those were good times that we shared. We thought those nights would. Bringing you back with Woods and Water, South Carolina, with a little autograph. Turn up the radio. I forgot to mention this. Dave is not here today. Angelo's back. Angelo's been with me since the beginning and shepherded me along and pretty much is responsible for how I am behind the mic today. But Dave got married today. What is it? 318? I guess I bet things pretty much over as far as the ceremony was. But, so congratulations to Dave and his wife and oh boy, holy deadlock. It's not holy wedlock. It's holy deadlock. You're at opposites for the rest of your life. No. Got a few things for the calendar today. And starting off, the South Carolina Wildlife, Harry Hampton Wildlife Fund is now accepting photo contest entries. I think I mentioned this last week. It's got a familiar ring to it. Anyway, we're out there taking pictures. It's fall leaf season, and migratory birds are going to start coming through. Deer season's in full swing. Just your average yard birds, your cardinals, your bluebirds, everybody's in full plumage and colors, and it's just a great time to take pictures. Kids outside playing in the leaves or, you know, if we get any snow. So now through deadline, February 15th of 2017, you can send in up to 2 photographs per person, and they've got some restrictions on how much you can manipulate it and what size and format file to send them and all. They're going to be judged, and winning photographs will be displayed at the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic March 24th to the 26th. And, well, there's some good ones. If you're on the, let's see, if you're on Facebook on the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources page, there are some, every once in a while I put up photo of the day, and it's some of the entries that didn't win. And I tell you, there's some good photographers out there. So anyway, if you're interested in that, I don't know if there's a prize. I think you just, oh well, maybe it's just recognition. But yeah, if you're out there taking pictures, this is something you can do, to showcase the Palmetto State. And, you know, like I said, I think they use your pictures however they want to the rest of the year, which is pretty good. Let's see. I think I'm going to skip those two right there. I'll skip one. Paddle Out Hunger Canoe and Kayak Race at State Park in Chester, South Carolina, November the 19th from 9 a.m. to 12. Join us at Chester State Park as we paddle out hungry. This recreational canoe and kayak race is open to all ages, skill, and ability as we paddle around the lake at Chester State Park. This race will benefit the Hunger Takes No Vacation food drive, and all revenue and food items collected will go towards local food banks. And, you know, fun prizes and stuff like that. That's November the 19th from 9 to 12, Chester State Park. You know, dress appropriately, and bring a change of clothes in case you get wet. Living History Park, North Augusta, South Carolina. Don't do much down towards Aiken and that way, but Christmas in the Backcountry, they started a little bit earlier on Saturday, November the 26th, 10 to 4, free admission. They're going to have Father Christmas there. He's going to make a Saturday, November, that's after Thanksgiving, so this is allowed. No Christmas around my house until the turkey has been eaten. Throughout time and cultures, he is known by various names such as Santa Claus, Sinterklaas, Kris Kringle, among others. Christmas traditions and celebrations varied throughout the colonial communities, usually as a result of the cultures of their citizens. So this is going to take place in North Augusta, South Carolina, Silver Bluff Audubon Center and Sanctuary. So it's free. It's kind of a colonial Christmas living history and, you know, decorate the, and they're saying to breeze, please bring apples, oranges, peanut butter for the birds and food for our four-legged friends, dogs and cats. And they're going to be local pet adoption centers benefit this one. Intercoastal Christmas Regatta. It is Christmas time. This one's going to take place again, November 26th. And this is the Little River Inlet, South Carolina. That's where it starts at 5 p.m. and travels south, arriving at Doc Holliday's Marina at 7 p.m. And this is just funny. All the boats will be decked out in Christmas lights and all. And Charleston will have one of these later on in December, actually. I think it's the first Saturday in December. But if you want to enter your boat, you can go on the their page, the Intercoastal Christmas Regatta page, and enter your boat. And if not, just go and watch and I always encourage people to get the Christmas lights out of the way early. Great Outdoor Gear Sale, Saturday, December the 3rd. It's going to be held at the James Island County Park in Charleston, South Carolina. Sales may items may include used tents, kayaks, mountain bikes, stand-up paddle boards, camping accessories, and other gear. All sales are final and no charge with paid gate admission. So this is like the used sale up at Sunridge Adventures, except it's happening in Charleston. And you can find more information there at the Charleston County Parks and Rec website. And they have a lot of stuff. If you just go down to Charleston, go to the Parks and Rec, it seems like they've got stuff going on a lot. And a lot of it's outdoor related. The 2016 Western North Carolina Fly Fishing Expo. It's December the 2nd and 3rd. We've got this one is in Asheville at the Ag Center. And then we've got another one coming up in Charleston. It'll be the second annual Shallow Water Expo. And it's not all fly fishing, but it does have a large fly fishing component to it. But this one is the largest fly fishing expo in Western North Carolina. Featured speakers, Hank Patterson, world-renowned fly fishing expert, Josh Lafferty, bass and muskie on the fly, Jeff Trigg, Arkansas White River System, Patrick Folkrod, South Holston and Watauga River, and Abby Bagwell, Blue Line Fishing the Blue Ridge, are some of the speakers. It's the 8th year. We're proud to continue the tradition that brings the southeastern fly fishing community together for camaraderie, education, and lots of fish tales. And let's see. Yeah, it's a diverse bunch. You know, trout fishing to chasing large predator fish like muskies to saltwater. It covers a lot of things. And I was thinking they had a little write-up, but they don't, about each individual speaker. But anyway, those are the guys. It's always a good time. You got, I've been, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. You'll have some speaking sessions going on. That's where your speakers come in. You've got, you know, Hunter Banks will have a big display. A lot of your fly fishing apparel companies will be there. I guess the guys from Flood Tide probably will be there this year. Southern Cultural on the Fly is usually there. You got some bamboo rod makers, which is really cool. We were on the river today and watching the guys fly fish. And I said, you know, there was an older gentleman there and it just told Debbie, I said, that's where I want to be in what, 20 years maybe. And I said, but when I get that far, I might not be able to fish as good, but I'm going to be walking around with a split cane bamboo rod. You know, at least I'll look the part. Okay. And there's always one or two bamboo rod makers up there and just, wow, this rod's will blow you away. I've never fished with one. I'm always scared to. I don't want to break one if it's not mine because then you're out, you know, $2,000-$3,000 or however much they cost to reap. And the thing about that is they'll just make a new tip for it. But, I'm not going to go there until it's one of my own. But yeah, that's my goal in life is to have a split cane bamboo fly rod. 3-weight and go odd. Go real light. 7-foot, 3-weight. That's what it's going to be. The National Wild Turkey Federation has always got stuff going on. Go to their website. It's some of the past events. They've had mentor dove hunts, women's deer hunt. That was just last weekend. They've got a mentor deer hunt on December the 3rd, a small game squirrel hunt on December the 27th. They got youth waterfowl hunts on the 4th of February, which is Youth Waterfowl Day. I believe that's what it is. And then they've got Learn to Hunt. Deer hunt was 9/17. Learn to Hunt Waterfowl 101 is December the 10th. Along with, you know, help for landowners who want to, you know, prescribe fire as a wildlife management tool, fur bearer trapping and all that. A lot going on. National Wild Turkey Federation is based in Edgefield, South Carolina. And if you're interested in any of the things they have going on, you can go to the National Wild Turkey NWTF.org. Directly, you need to speak with someone, a guy named Travis Sumner. I met Travis when we were down there for the Scope Convention. And his telephone number is 803-637-7517. But while we were down there, they have kind of, and I know turkeys are up and down in South Carolina, been good, been bad. This year was kind of down. But they are turning, in addition to their turkey management and restoration efforts, they're turning now to bringing more people into hunting. which is they've got a mentor program going on. Met Chris Carroll, who's one of their big mentors, and we're going to have him on. We scheduling again can't be a problem. Solo First Wilderness Aid class. This is taught out of the, thanks, Angela. Angela's warm. I got 2 minutes to go. This is taught out of the Glendale Outdoor Leadership School over in Glendale, South Carolina, on the other side of Spartanburg. And we used to have them here on the show, and we're going to make an effort to get back out, and because they have a new director there now. The 16-hour Wilderness First Aid class is designed for the outdoor enthusiast or trip leader who wants a basic level of first aid training for short trips, family, friends, and outdoor groups. The course covers topics ranging from injury preparation and prevention to assessment and treatment. And there's a long list of topics. Mine was sprains and, you know, broken bones and hypothermia. Course topics include injury response and assessment, musculoskeletal injuries, environmental emergencies, survival skills, and soft tissue injuries and medical emergencies. This course is taught by certified instructors. You can add a CPR course to it. The cost of the class for 2-day weekend is $175. It's all instruction materials. You can add for $40 a CPR to the course, and you can find more at the setgoals.org website. And this is a course I would love to take. I just don't have 2 days to donate in February. So anyway, that's the calendar. If you can't get any of that stuff in, get in the car and drive somewhere, put on a pair of hiking boots or tennis shoes and go for a nice walk in the woods. Hang on through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. You know, so many weeks I come in here and I've got back-to-back-to-back guests or anything. It's rare that I don't have somebody, but scheduling this week was a problem. Nobody's fault. It's just the timing of what they had going on and the relevancy of this program. So, if you want to call in, you had anything you want to say or text in or call me, it's 877-235-9405. I have no clue. It's wide open. I guess this would be Rush's equivalent to Open Line Friday. Just don't call me and ask me about something I don't know about. Please. yes, the election's over. We're going to have to, he said a lot of stuff. Now we're going to have to make sure he follows through with it. And there's besides the Supreme Court nominees, the Second Amendment things, there's some other issues that need to be addressed. And Outdoor Life published a week or so ago this article, and I thought it was really good. Congratulations on your election. Now the work of leading and healing America begins. This was written to whoever was elected. It was written before the election. I know there's no shortage of places to start, but sneak a look out the window of Air Force One. All that open space that you flew over as a candidate is the real America, and it's full of game and fish. And fish and have citizens ready to work with you. When you visit us at our wild game dinners and conservation banquets and hunter's breakfast, and you're going to get plenty of these invitations, you'll find that politics don't matter to us as much as solutions. You should know this. You should know this about sportsmen. We are bipartisan. We love our guns as much as we love clean water and abundant wildlife. We're practical, independent problem solvers. And at the risk of overplaying the patriot card, sportsmen carry the flame of self-reliance and grit that has defined America since we were a collection of colonies. So if you're looking for a few policy wins early in your first term, and a place to stake your claim that you are a pragmatic visionary, You can't do better than addressing some of these issues that are critical to American sportsmen and sportswomen. Number one, articulate a sensible public lands policy. You know, we've had Steve Rinella on the show talking about the public lands. You know, there's, 600 million acres of public lands, most of it in the West, granted, but they're our lands. They're owned by the federal government, and they are, you know, free to go use for the most part, a hunting license or a fishing license, and it's yours. Radical fringe groups have reignited a new kind of sagebrush rebellion, arguing that the federal government has no business owning land. The most dangerous expression of this mindset was the armed takeover of the National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon last January, where there are plenty of extremists using legislation instead of guns to achieve the same goal. Here's the deal. There are some federal lands that should be sold, either because they're too expensive to manage or because they have little public value. But the fire sale radicals forget that there's actually a very useful tool at your disposal to identify and process the sale. The Federal Land Transaction Facilitation Act. Encourage Congress to reauthorize this act. Then your administration should use it to identify low-value federal lands, parcels with no public access, or that are hugely expensive to manage. Sell them and use the proceeds to buy higher-value lands that promote public access, wildlife habitat, watershed conservation. Pretty good point. Access is one of the biggest problems to outdoors people. Number two, promote a national stream access program. We wish we had seen you outdoors more during the crazy primary and general election season. I get it. You're not an average outdoor person, but many millions of your constituents are, and fishing is one of our favorite outdoor activities. Yet most of the waterways in America are off limits to public recreation because they flow through private land or are too small for navigable watercraft. We're not big proponents of top-down policies, especially when they come from Washington, D.C., but you can immediately open up millions of miles of fishable streams to the public if you were to promote nationally the sort of stream access we have in the state of Montana. The law here says that our public is allowed to access a stream anywhere it crosses a public roadway or public land. Our law has made Montana an international destination for fishing, and all these anglers have made the state's economy robust and resilient. When you support public recreation access, you also support a sustainable recreation economy. But public access has these additional benefits: promotion of healthy lifestyles and outdoor traditions, resolution of our nature's nature deficit disorder, and conservation of landscapes and waterways. Number three, and I totally agree on that one. Number three, resolve the public land filming mess. A lot of people don't know about this, and it's one of those things that kind of makes you scratch your head and went, I love to take photographs, some of which appear in this magazine. I also love to shoot videos of my hunts, and some of that footage shows up in an outdoorlife.com or our Facebook and Instagram feeds. Thing is, if I'm shooting video and photography on public lands, I may be breaking the law unless I get a commercial use permit for the land management agency that administers the public property. It's not just me and my fellow editors. Public land hunters and anglers are all exposed to significant fines if we post a social media image that might be construed as commercial. The permits are expensive, often arbitrary, and time-consuming to obtain. They were originally intended to mitigate the impact on our public lands of big Hollywood-scale film crews. And while these projects should continue to be held to a high standard, the one-size-fits-all permit no longer applies in the Snapchat age. And it probably prevents many of us from promoting the message that our public lands are productive, beautiful, and inviting places to visit. With a simple executive action, you could waive the outdated filming requirements for millions of America. Number four, support conservation funding. For too long, politics have gummed up the Land and Water Conservation Fund. This money derives from a portion of offshore oil drilling revenue and is essentially an energy mitigation tax intended to fund critical conservation projects. Passed with wide bipartisan congressional support in 1964, for decades, it provided up to $900 million annually to help states consolidate public land, invest in wildlife refuges, and conserve critical wildlife habitat. Partisan politicians now control this funding spigot, turning it on and off to suit their interest. Consistent, predictable funding for conservation has never been more important. Most state wildlife agencies historically have been funded by sportsmen's hunting and fishing license dollars, but as America's demographics change and our population becomes more urban and removed from traditional uses of the land, wildlife managers and open space advocates need the long-term predictability that the fully funded LWCF provides. Normalize the use of suppressors. Now, this is an interesting one. The firearm suppressor has an image problem. First is the name. Commonly called a silencer, it's easy to think wrongly that it renders a gun silent. And thanks to innumerable Hollywood villains, it's synonymous with evil doing. Why else would somebody want to quiet the sound of a gun gunshot except to break the law? In order to save our sense of hearing, that's why. It's time that America caught up with the rest of the civilized world and promoted the use of suppressors for hunting and recreational shooting. Across much of Europe, suppressors are required on firearms as a public health consideration for shooters and because they minimize the spooking of game animals. As it now stands, and if an American wants to own a suppressor, he is subjected to a thicket of archaic rules that date back to Al Capone and the heyday of organized crime rings. Ultimately, we urge Congress to pass the Hearing Protection Act of 2015, but until that happens, there are things that your administration can do to remove the stigma from suppressors and make it easy for ordinary law-abiding citizens to own them. Direct the ATF to streamline Form 4 of the paperwork required to register a suppressor. Reduce the cost of the suppressor permit and shorten the many months waiting period we currently endure to own one. Number 6, respect the Conservation Coalition. This should be obvious, but it takes a lot more than a village to manage America's abundant fish and wildlife in the wild places where they live. There's an alphabet soup of public agencies, nonprofit organizations, think tanks, and advocates who spend a lot of time time and energy thinking about conservation issues than either you or I do. They already have detailed plans and strategies about how you should tackle things like public access, conservation funding, and land management conflicts. Listen to them. Listen to these folks who represent a wide coalition of perspectives, political views, and geographic regions. You have the luxury and the permission given you by America's voters to pick and choose from recent recommendations, but at least listen. There's a reason we call ourselves conservationists. We like to conserve. We are reasonable, restrained, and thoughtful. But we also are opinionated, and it's our opinion that you have a short time to spend your political capital to make a difference for America's natural resources and our legacy of public and hunting fishing on public lands. You know, any of those are probably easily done, bipartisan, if you want to call it that, across the aisle. I had a backcountry hunters and anglers statement on the U.S. presidential election results. As you know, the Republican platform actually includes a section where they are for selling off, transferring public lands to individual states. And it's not a wholesale. It's a lot different than it sounds. And there's some concern, but you know, Trump has stated that he is not in favor of the wholesale transfer of Western lands to the Western states. And I believe him. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. We got to hold his feet to the fire about a lot of things. But, you know, he's got two sons that hunt. They don't need public land, but they realize somebody's got to start and public access is one of those things we've got to have. So as we go through the next 4 years, we'll see what happens on the conservation front. So hang on through the break. Back with the final segment of today's show. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. A little confusion out there. Back last legislative session, well, I guess it's been going on for a few years, but last year when Senate 454 was coming through its final versions and all, there was a section of that bill, and SB 454 is the new deer regulations, the tagging program that was passed by the South Carolina legislature and will go into effect July of 2017. One of the points that was in the original bill was a coyote bounty program where if you, and I can't, at this point, I can't even remember what it was, but it was a tagged, you had tagged coyotes out there. I think the tags were worth $1,000 and it caused some real concerns about, you know, safety issues. So it was taken out. It was when the final bill was passed, that provision was out and there was nothing about a tagging program in this. And then DNR, or actually the South Carolina Legislature, General Assembly, through a budget proviso, directed the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources to develop and implement a coyote tagging and reward program. So what we ended up with is the Harvest Incentive Program. And it was a budget proviso, 4710, 2016 South Carolina General Assembly. It says, it directed DNR to tag and release four male coyotes in each of the four game zones. So it's 16 total. The coyotes will be ear tagged and the tags will have specific contact information embossed on them. Anyone who kills one of the tagged coyotes, save the carcass for verification, contact South Carolina DNR, will receive a complimentary lifetime hunting license. And you can designate if you want somebody else to have the license of your choice. It's a voluntary, there's a voluntary registration program to gauge interest and et cetera, et cetera. So there's some things there. And it's caused some back and forth, if you will. And this was actually vetoed by Governor Haley. It was veto number 11, and it specifically talked about the predator control program. And I think she had it right on this one. This proviso establishes a capture, tag, and release program for coyotes. If a Department of Natural Resources officer is expending the energy to take a coyote, then that coyote should not be returned to the wild. While I believe that there is still much work to do, tagging coyotes and releasing them to be tracked by bounty hunters on the promise of lifetime hunting privileges is not the answer to our deer population problems. I ask that you sustain this veto in the interest of common sense and public safety, which I agree with. They didn't. They overrode her. So now we have this program. And there's a lifetime license out there. If you're a hunter, you need to be shooting everyone you see in the off season. You need to be trapping everyone every time you can. The downside of trapping is, you know, you have to check those traps every 24 hours. So if your, you know, hunt club is 2 hours away, well, you got 4 hours to drive to check those in 24 hour time period. But it's out there. And just so there's no confusion, that's it. It went from being $1,000 bounty to being a lifetime license, and it was vetoed, I think. DNR wants you to be careful on the roads. Who doesn't want you to be careful on the roads? But it's especially after the time change. You know, what gets dark at 5:30, gets light at 6:30 in the morning. So it's not that the deer are more active. But anyway, their release is, you know, watch for the deer out on the roads. despite a persistent rumor, the Department of Natural Resources or other state agencies will not compensate motorists for injuries or damages resulting from deer collisions. You know, our population is increasing. People are moving to rural areas and more cars on the roads leads to more deer vehicle collisions, especially now after the time change. You're going to see more on the roads because deer travel more early in the morning and late at night. And, you know, that's when most people are on the roads, either going to work or coming home. So be careful. And it's, you know, it's year round, but normally when the time is different and the days are longer, you don't have to worry about this, but now you're going to work when those deer are actively moving. And I forget what they say that is. I can't remember the name they give to deer that makes them want to move early at low light conditions and late at low light conditions. So just be careful. You know, the rut is here, which means bucks are chasing does, and who knows, you know, if you're a hunter, you can see them at 12 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the morning, like at my house the other night. So just be careful. First thing you do, slow down. Don't honk the horn because, you know, that might make them do something they wouldn't normally do and run out in front of you. So just slow down, be aware they're out there, look for the eyes, and we'll all be safe. You know, there's a burn ban in effect for, it started out as 5 counties in the upstate. It has now been expanded for all Piedmont counties in South Carolina, which is Abbeville, Anderson, Cherokee, Chester, Edgefield, Fairfield, Greenville, Greenwood, Lawrence, Lexington, McCormick, Newberry, Oconee, Pickens, Richland, Saluda, Spartanburg, Union, and York. Don't have an outdoor fire. Don't flick your cigarette out the window. It's dry out there. We're 11 inches behind. This morning I was up at Bald Head Rock and Table Rock is on fire. You know, it can happen that quick. And there was I forget how many fires are burning right now in Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina. There's got to be 40 or 50 of them. Another Table Rock fire went from 50 to 250. So anyway, be careful. There's a burning ban in effect. I like my fires in my fireplace. I'm not doing any fires right now because if you walk across my yard, it's not grass is flying up. It's little puffs of dirt. It's just so dry. And here in the upstate, especially over in the western part of the upstate, it is very, very, very dry. Pickens, Oconee counties over there. So just be careful. You know, I have some friends that live in California and they can't believe we actually start fires here, control burns, but you do it. You know, it's a management tool. And it's always done with humidity. You never burn when that humidity is low. You want high humidity and you don't want summertime heat. So because you want it cool enough, you know, the crown of a tree, I think has to stay below 125 degrees. I believe that's what the forester told me. So when you do control burns, you want to do them when it's cool. So by the time the heat from the fire reaches the crown of a tree, it doesn't elevate that temperature, which is an interesting fact I didn't know about. I'm going to skip some of this other stuff. I'll probably cover this later on. You know, we've got all these protests about the election, the snowflake generation. I got my feelings hurt. Universities work to purge male students of their toxic masculinity. You know, part of the problem we have right now is that we've purged too much toxic, we've purged too much already, you know? And I'm not going to, I don't want to be negative. But anyway, parents, look at you. And one of the best ways to keep them in touch with reality is get them outside, you know? Get them out of the bubble they live in with school and social media and whatever else. News from the television, you know, break the cycle. Give them something that, in my life has been one of the greatest blessings I could have ever had besides my wife and kids is to grow up outdoors. It's harder these days. I understand that. It just means you've got to put a little more effort into it. But anyway, the Wade. Six fly anglers you'll meet on the water. And I thought I was watching these guys fish today and it's just natural when you read an article like this, you look at somebody, you try to put them into what the article said. This was Post Fly Box article. Number one, the Gore-Tex guy. As if a magazine ad jumped off the page and landed next to you in the river, this guy has all the newest gear that looks brand new and picture perfect. Have his waders ever touched the water? His rods and reels are the same ones you have set as your desktop wallpaper at work, and the back of his truck is better stocked than your local fly shop. The redneck. Wet wading in overalls, shirtless, and a can of worms in his back pocket that he uses to bait his dry fly before sending that abomination out into the river. This dude is the antithesis of fly fishing and the elitist, and you curses his every move. He also catches a ton of fish, which makes it way worse. The elitist. His favorite view is looking down at other anglers that simply don't understand. His bamboo rods are so pretty they make your knees weak, but he barely ever fishes them because they cost more than your crummy truck. He only identifies bugs by their scientific names and knows each life cycle of more bugs than you knew existed. This guy, the Instagrammer, here we go. This guy can't take a step without posting it on social media. He makes you pause when you sip your beer so he can kneel down and get the right amount of sun flare in the shot. He makes you fish on the worst weather days to make him look cooler on his social feed. You know he posts the same fish three times more from different angles, And he'll even change outfits a few times to make it look like he's on the water every day. The noob. The second this angler starts stringing up his rod, you know he's a noob. You know, because you pulled it in you pulled in at the same time and you're ready to hit the water while his line keeps falling down his guides when he tries to grab the leader and he can't quite find the strap on his waders. Take this guy under your wing. It's your duty as a seasoned fly angler to take a noob under your wings as your Padawan for the day. You're likely to be rewarded by a free round back at the truck once he figures out how to take off his wading boots. The old timer. You might never see this angler, but you do pay attention to their every move. Like an apparition, the old timer knows how to sneak away from the put in and find the best spots on the river you didn't even know existed. He can cast three times as far as you with half the effort, and his knots look like works of art. Find an old timer to be your mentor and your jump on the fast track to being the best angler on the river. That's from Post Flybox. They get some good stuff every once in a while. And then there's this stuff that I'll get to later on. Man, even when I got a show to get through stuff, I still can't get through stuff. Anyway. Oh, me. Get out there. It's the great time of the year. Let's see. Yeah. Ah, when you put Chuck Norris in your GPS, he's always right behind you. Hadn't done a Chuck in a while. Hey, look. Thanks for tuning in. Make time to get out there. Be careful when you do. Find the back roads to travel. Don't forget the camera. See you next week here on More Woods and Water, South Carolina. In my mind.